Noon. It is 2 p.m. on Wednesday, October 9th, 2024. This is the afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, please call the roll.
Max.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Gonzalez.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. We'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum.
Welcome to the Portland City Council. To testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance on the council agenda at www.portland.gov/council/agenda. Information on engaging with council can be found on the council clerk's webpage. Individuals may testify for 3 minutes unless the presiding officer states otherwise. Your microphone will be muted when your time is over. The presiding officer observes the court order. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If you cause a disruption, a warning will be given. Further disruption will result in ejection from the meeting. Anyone who fails to leave once ejected is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually. Your testimony should address the matter being considered. When testifying, state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. If you are a lobbyist, identify the organization you represent. Virtual testifiers should unmute themselves when the council clerk calls your name. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have one item this afternoon, item number 866, an emergency ordinance.
Adopt the FY 2024-25 fall supplemental budget and make other budget related changes.
Colleagues, now we'll hear the fiscal year, 2024-25 budget monitoring process, the bump ordinance. Historically, the fall bump has had two functions, giving city council and the public a summary of prior year budget activity, making technical adjustments to the current fiscal year budget to reflect prior year end accounting. As the city transitions to the new form of government, the fall bump this year focuses on true up ending balance from the prior fiscal year, and it addresses a very small set of required unanticipated budgetary needs in the current fiscal year. Given the general inflation to existing costs, the sunsetting of federal one-time resources to fund ongoing needs, and the elevated level of deferred maintenance, the demand for resources continues to surpass availability within the city. No surprise to any of us here. In August, I provided fall bump guidance that limited new funding requests and directed service areas to look for current year savings through a coordinated citywide review of reclassifications, vacancies, and materials and services expenses. That work is currently in progress. Additionally, per my direction, the City Budget Office and Grants Management team completed a thorough review of American Rescue Plan expenditures to ensure that no ARP dollars are left on the table and unspent. I want to thank the city leadership team, and in particular, the City Budget Office, for their excellent work to deliver a fall bump proposal that keeps the city moving forward through the current fiscal year and into the next administration. This afternoon, we're going to hear from Deputy City Administrator Jonas Beery, and then City Budget Office Director Ruth Levine will walk us through the fall bump ordinance. Council will introduce and second any amendments for consideration. And then, of course, we'll hear public testimony. After public testimony, council will deliberate and vote on any amendments that are offered. Once we've voted on the amendments, we'll then vote on the fall bump package as a whole. And with that, we'll turn it over to Jonas.
Great. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. Good afternoon. For the record, Jonas Beery, the city's Deputy City Administrator of Budget and Finance and Chief Financial Officer. This fall bump recommendation represents a prudent approach that addresses critical immediate needs while holding resources in contingency to provide maximum flexibility as we navigate the coming months. We anticipate a challenging budget environment for fiscal 25-26. The proposed bump strategy is an important element to guide the city towards financial sustainability by providing a long runway to address those financial challenges. The final fiscal year 23-24 general fund revenues came in very close to the April 2024 forecast, technically up about just over 1% or about $8 million. The estimated fiscal 23-24 general fund ending balance after adjustments was approximately $95 million, right within the ideal target of $90 to $100 million. Combined with the current year savings initiatives described by the mayor, the good news is that there is some capacity in projected one-time general fund available to reallocate in fiscal 24-25 via this fall bump. However, we also expect a significant amount of uncertainty during the remainder of this fiscal year, as well as the ongoing general fund budget gap in 25-26. Ruth will provide more detail in a moment, but the summary of the recommended approach as reflected in the ordinance and the supporting materials is threefold. First, and as is typical in the fall bump, this ordinance accommodates many technical adjustments to true up beginning fund balances citywide and is the first opportunity for bureaus to make adjustments to their current year resources. Second, the city leadership team has reviewed the exception requests that were brought forward by service areas and identified approximately $3.7 million in funding for immediately known fiscal 24-25 required expenditures that were previously unanticipated. Third, the package directs that the remaining available general fund be retained in contingency to address potential needs that are likely to arise in the near term during the remainder of this fiscal year. And if we're successful in containing spending, any remaining unspent general fund balance can become available as a one-time resource to help bridge the expected budget challenge in 25-26. Lastly, I'd like to appreciate this year's new and collaborative decision-making process. I'm very optimistic regarding the path forward in citywide budget development and would like to thank and commend Deputy City Administrators, Bureau Directors, City Budget Office staff, and many Bureau contributors citywide for supporting this new process and approach. And I'll now hand over to City Budget Office Director Ruth Levine and Bump Coordinator Anthony Locke to walk through the proposed ordinance and the numbers in a bit more detail.
Great, thank you. Ruth Levine, City Budget Office Director. So I'm just going to go through some of the details here. So on the screen, you can see the sort of high level of where we started going into this fall bump. So the top above the line, as Jonas mentioned, is the prior year ending fund balance of about $95 million. The reason there's two numbers broken out here, there's the $82 million. That's what we knew of as ending fund balance as of September 1. And then we had a late adjustment for some revenue that was recognized late, about $13 million that brought us to the total of the $95 million. So good news, we ended up last year roughly where we wanted to be. The adjustments below the line are sort of required adjustments that we have to make. There was about $55 million that was essentially already budgeted towards known expenditures in the current fiscal year. And then there's $17.7 million of encumbrance carryovers. Those are purchase orders that bureaus opened and did not sort of finish paying last year. And then there's a required adjustment to that sends funding to the Housing Investment Fund. That's a policy requirement and some other sort of accounting adjustments, lands us at the $23.7 million. That's the amount that we are allocating through this fall bump package. Next slide. So also, as Jonas mentioned, we went through a process that was sort of laid out by the fall bump guidance that the mayor put out in August for exception requests. So the sort of guidance was no new allocations in the current fiscal year, but there was a process for allowing exceptions to that guidance that went through the new city leadership team. And so the bar was very high. It was really only the requests that came in by and large were for things that were really only things that we essentially have to pay for this fiscal year. And so those are the ones that were approved, and that's what's on the slide. So there's about $3.7 million of them. And I'm not going to go through them line by line right now. Happy to answer any questions. Several of them are required sort of by policy or were through labor bargaining agreements that took place kind of after the budget was adopted. The Bureau of Human Resources ones are the biggest. The PPA fund, general fund subsidies, is just the health fund for Portland Police Associations. They have their own health benefit, and that's funded. That's essentially a required payment that we have to make to fund that health fund subfund. And then the rest are for BHR sort of payroll and operations to fix some issues related to payment of the city's taxes, and then also reflecting labor bargaining agreements in our SAP, in our payroll system. And so that's the kind of biggest chunk in here. And then there's a few other little things The amount, the $350,000 is for an auto and retail theft task force that was supposed to get into the adopted budget, but didn't. That's going to the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. And then a few other little things for space rent to just to true up some issues that were discovered in the current year budget. So that is the summary of the exception requests that are in the bump package. Go to the next slide. So the remainder, so we had that $23.3 million, that's the, and then 3.7 of that went to those exception requests. This is the rest of it. And so we split it into two buckets. The first is the capital set aside amounts. So this ordinance actually waives the capital set aside requirement, which is a requirement in financial policy to allocate 50% of ending fund balance after adjustments to a capital set aside contingency account. The reason it's being waived is because we did this a little bit differently this year, and the items that are on this list are sort of known capital related expenditures that and liabilities that the city faces, but they don't quite meet the technical definition of capital set aside. So that's why we're waiving it in the ordinance itself, but we are still allocating these items to capital set aside. It's still in a contingency account, so it hasn't been budgeted in the Bureau. These aren't being budgeted right now. They're just kind of recognizing, hey, we know we have these liabilities outstanding. We have to pay for them, so let's use this vehicle to do that. So I'll just go through them really quickly. So the first is the ADA compliance. That is both in PBOT and Parks. The PBOT has the Creek settlement, which is an agreed upon number of curb ramps that they build, 1,500 curb ramps per year. That has a funding gap associated with it. Parks also has ADA requirements and is one of their largest sort of items on their capital maintenance list. And then the second one, City Fleet headquarters relocation, that's part of the Kirby Garage relocation that was included in the budget, but it's a large known expense that's going to be hitting Bureau's budget starting this fiscal year. And so this would help to sort of offset that to some extent, not completely. The last one, the OOF squid, is the flood safety benefit fee for the Columbia River Levee project. And so that would, again, that's a known, we have to pay that. There was state legislation that required the city to pay what will be about $5.3 million in 25-26 towards the Columbia River Levee. And so those are the capital set aside. That's what's in that bucket. And then below is sort of contingency and policy set aside. These are also, again, in contingency. So we would have to come back to council to actually allocate these into Bureau's operating budgets. But I'm just going to go through them quickly. So the first one, the emergency fund, that's per a budget note that should be filled up to $1 million in each fall bump. So that's what that is. That's just for if there's a city declared emergency to cover some of the Bureau expenses related to emergencies. The prior year remaining public safety set aside amount of $915,000. Last year in the fall bump, you all approved an $18 million policy set aside for public safety, recognizing that there were going to be overtime expenses above budget within those bureaus. And sort of the good news is that the amount they need this year is lower, in large part because the budgets were adjusted in the 24-25 adopted budget. But there are still some things sort of that are difficult to predict in terms of exactly how much resources they'll need. And so we're holding these two amounts in contingency, the 915, which was left from last year, and then the 3.5 million, which was the amount police requested for their overtime above budget. There's a lot that impacts public safety overtime, both in police and fire, and in BOIC as well. And that's because they're so big, it's just very hard to predict. So it's good to have a little bit in contingency to be able to address what are likely expenses. And then the last line there, the current year health benefits set aside, that's just to put aside some money because the amount that we budgeted for the 24-25 health benefit increase amount was equivalent to about a 5% increase. Bureaus are actually paying closer to seeing a 10% increase. That's based on the agreement that you all made in the spring around the health benefit increases, where there was sort of a 12% increase that was partially offset by an employee surcharge. In any case, that this amount will help to cover bureaus if they are sort of hitting their benefits budgets by the end of the fiscal year because of that increase in health benefit expenses. So that is the basic summary. I think we can move to the slide.
Pause here. I don't want to interrupt the flow of your presentation, but I think I can, spending a minute here now, I think can save us 15 minutes later on.
Deal.
Great. All right. So very quickly, can you remind me what the ADA compliance liabilities pay for?
Sure. So again, this is a contingency amount. So it's not in the Bureau's budgets, but the idea was to take this amount and say, you know, if we have this funding available, we have these known ADA compliance requirements, right, both in PBOT and Parks. This is loosely based on an estimate of the outstanding creek liability in PBOT, and then kind of the rest for Parks. But again, it's not, it would have to be allocated based on actual, you know, an actual proposal about how much money is needed. So it's really truly an estimate, but in both of those bureaus, there's a much larger, frankly, outstanding liability on ADA compliance.
Perfect. Do you remember how much that funding gap is between our liabilities and the $6 million we have on the table right here?
Sure. I mean, I don't have a total number off the top of my head. I think PBOT alone is something in the $30 to $40 million range. It depends a bit on how you estimate the cost of a ramp, which go up. I don't have the Parks number.
Okay. So great. So we got about 30 million in liabilities, even just in the PBOT space for ADA compliance. We got 6 million here, perhaps set aside, and we're complying with something. And you said in the context of the PBOT, we're complying with the Creek settlement. Can you remind me what that is?
Basically, Commissioner, we were basically sued
by whom?
By ADA, by a group that advocates for wheelchair access.
Okay.
And we lost, or we actually settled. We didn't go to court. And the settlement was that we would build 18,000 ramps over 12 years.
Okay.
And we can't, it's difficult to do the math because they're all different.
Right.
And we're doing it over a long period of time. So we could present value it, but basically that's where it came from, that liability.
Okay. Can we choose not to do that?
No, we can't choose not to do that.
Okay. That is helpful to me. Thank you very much.
We could choose not to. We'd be back in federal court if we did.
Got it. That's helpful. And that answers some questions that have been rolling around my head this afternoon. We may come back to that later today.
Great. Does that complete the presentation?
We just have one last slide, which is to note that we normally, CBO has a compensation set aside contingency account. And we usually have bureaus request that amount in the spring if they need it. So it's the estimate is based on essentially COLA and health benefits. And the reason we have them come back in the spring is because if they have vacancy savings in their bureau, they just may not need that amount. And so it's helpful for us to have that flexibility. This year, we are planning not to have a spring bump come spring. We usually do that in early April. We will have a brand new council. And per the recommendations that came in from Jessica Kennard and a capacity as a consultant for the city this summer, they recommended not to continue having or to at least reduce the number of times we come to council throughout the fiscal year to adjust budgets. Frankly, we do it more than anyone else. And so in planning to not have a spring bump, we said, okay, here, here are your compensation set aside amounts, and we just directly budgeted those into bureaus. We will have to have continuing conversations over the course of the winter with bureaus about what this will look like, you know, how, you know, we're not going to just say, oh, we're not going to monitor budgets anymore. So we're still going to do budget monitoring. It just will likely look different. So this is just to say, for one thing, bureaus should have a bit more, you know, most bureaus have historically, I think, forecasted compensation set aside as part of their spending plan anyways. But this does actually allocate it into their budgets. They should have a little bit more flexibility. So just wanted to note that as well. And I think that's it.
All right, very good. So at this point, we'll hear and second any amendments. I know Commissioner Ryan has at least one amendment. I would ask everybody, please read your proposed amendments and then seek a second. After amendments have been placed on the table for discussion, we'll hear public testimony. So I'll now open up the floor to my colleagues for discussion of amendments. Commissioner Ryan, you're up first.
Thank you, Mayor. I would like to propose an amendment and make a motion to reappropriate commissioner offices and the mayor's office prior year general fund underspending to the future city council and future mayor. My team and I have heard overwhelming demand from the community, GTAC, current commissioners, and community about the need for more staffing in 2025. My amendment responds to these genuine concerns for our new council, and it gives the new council tools to meet their evolving needs. This reserve of funds comes from the underspending of the council offices from 2023-24 budget cycle, and the funds underspent by the mayor's office will be moved forward for the use by the next mayor. Those funds will be set aside for the use by the next and first elected representatives of our new city government as they see fit. This amount for council is not to be seen as a per office allocation. My amendment is simply good governance and good manners. I want to ensure our new city council has the resources to make realistic adjustments in 2025, and I'm confident these essential funds will improve the new government's constituent responsiveness and legislative efforts. We have a responsibility to help the new council where we can, and this is a great opportunity to steward our city forward with options to make adjustments where needed. I'll now read the amendment into the record. Motioned, and you all have copies of this, and I had conversations with everyone yesterday, and I know that my chief of staff, TJ McHugh, has been in touch with all your offices as well. Motion to reappropriate commissioner offices and the mayor's office prior year general fund underspending to the future city council and future mayor. Decrease contingency within the general fund in funds management, previously earmarked as capital set aside for ADA compliance liabilities by $437,773. Increase bureau operating expenses within the general fund and city council by $342,250. Increase bureau operating expenses within the general fund and the office of the mayor by $95,523. Update exhibits 1-5 as needed to reflect this change. Current year underspending after December 21st, 2024 from the Commission of Public Affairs, Commissioner of Public Affairs, Commissioner of Public Safety, Commissioner of Public Utilities, and the Commissioner of Public Works is expected to be reappropriated in City Council in the over expenditure ordinance. Do I have a second?
Second.
Commissioner Ryan moves. Ryan number one and Commissioner Gonzalez seconds. Commissioner Mapps.
Thanks for putting this on the table, Commissioner Ryan. I have a couple of questions about your particular proposal. First, there's a fairly obvious gap between the title of the proposal and, frankly, the substance of the proposal. The title of the proposal is motion to reappropriate, basically underspend from council offices to future council offices. But your first bullet seems to indicate these dollars are not coming from council offices, but instead are coming from the capital set aside for ADA compliance, which just profoundly confuses me. What's happening here?
Well, you were here. So what happened is your office, all of our offices had some underspending last year, and it went into, and then the budget office reappropriated it after they received our underspending, and they put it into that category.
So
could you explain that further, Ruth?
Sure, yeah. Happy to. Yeah, so I mean, the way the general fund underspending works is, you remember that first slide with the big ending fund balance number? Everybody's underspending in the general fund at the end of the fiscal year just falls into that one big bucket. It's sure. It's no longer yours or mine, or you know, right? It's just all in one bucket. And then we go balance, we do a balanced bump submission. So it's not, I couldn't tell you which bucket it's in. It's somewhere in the $95 million. And so it got reallocated based on the proposed bump that we submitted. And so it's just sort of in there. So now if you wanted to pull it out, it has to come from somewhere because it's a balanced submission. So that's how that worked. Does that help?
So in practice, what do I pay attention to here in terms of what's actually happening with this amendment? The title says we're pulling out underspend, but it seems like that is in the past. Underspend in council office seems like that's in the past. It seems like the proposal before us today actually pulls out dollars that are in a set aside to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act.
So, Commissioner, if I can attempt to sort of give the chain of thought here. So there's underspending available that's effectively in fund balance. The proposed bump, as was submitted to council by City Budget Office, allocates that available fund balance to various places, the exception requests, the capital set aside or replicant of the capital set aside, and then the other contingency amounts. And a portion of that was identified as towards going towards ADA.
Yeah.
So that's sort of step two where we are now. The Commissioner Ryan's amendment is suggesting modifying that proposal to reduce the amount that's going to that ADA compliance line item, for lack of a better word, to be reallocated towards the council and mayor offices.
Are we still obliged to comply with our settlement with the ADA? But we're pulling dollars out of this particular pot, despite the fact that we've lost a lawsuit that says we're not, our infrastructure doesn't let people in wheelchairs get to where
correct. This would put fewer dollars in the current year targeted towards meeting that CREEC ADA compliance obligation.
I mean, I think
7%.
We would just have to fund it some other way, right? I mean, this the strategy of putting these amounts in contingency is to say, okay, we have this, you know, if come the end of this fiscal year, we have this money available. It's just kind of putting it aside as a tool to address a known liability that really we'll be budgeting for next year. And again, in subsequent years, but so it's really, it's one of the tools to address that liability that we know we have.
And if I may also just add, you know, just reminder that this contingency strategy with kind of putting these amounts in contingency but identifying targets is a different approach than the city's taken, in large part to maintain maximum flexibility, knowing we're entering sort of a period of uncertainty over the next few months for a variety of reasons, and hoping that if we don't need to spend those flexible dollars, that we have a little bit to help accommodate next year's budget. So it is an important point that they're not allocated dollars, right? We still have to fund that. They're not appropriated. This would take a portion of those dollars. The proposed amendment would take a portion of the dollars and appropriate them specifically to a dedicated purpose.
Okay. So just so I understand, the amendment on the table pulls about $500,000 that we've set aside to build curb cuts so people in wheelchairs and whatnot can cross the street, get to the bus stop and all that, and takes that $500,000 and does what with it?
Well, it appropriates them in the budget to be spent, available to be spent on
council staff.
Council expenditures. I mean, I'd reiterate this is one-time dollars, so it could be used for staffing, but it is not an ongoing resource. It's a one-time resource, so that's a decision that would be made via the OEO and by a future council.
Yeah. And for the record, it is the number is $437 million, which is 7% of the current set aside for this year, Commissioner, and 1% of the total $40 million over the next 4 years. 5 years.
Yeah.
But I would bring that to perspective.
I appreciate that caveat. And I think it's probably obvious to folks in the room my concern. You know, we've lost a lawsuit that basically told us you have to build curb cuts, city of Portland, because people with disabilities can't get around to where we need to go. We don't have, where they need to go. We have never set aside enough money to do this. We set aside a little bit of money for that purpose here, and now we're talking about pulling those dollars out in order to basically increase staff for the next city council. And I agree, increasing staff for the next city council is an important thing, and I think the next city council will have the power to do that. Anytime you're in a policy and budgeting making position, you have to make choices between forward-facing, public-facing, direct services to the community, and staffing our offices. I'll tell you, at least so far, with what I've heard today, if I have the choice of building more curb cuts for people in wheelchairs versus hiring more staff and bureaucrats for City Hall, I'm highly inclined to build the curb cuts, because we literally have lost a lawsuit. We have to do this. We've done this in federal court. Like, this is, frankly, we have versions of this conversation all the time. I think it's well past due that we build these freaking curb cuts so we could move on with our lives. But that's just my observation on this, and I look forward to dialogue about this particular amendment.
Can I ask some quick follow-up questions? So the capital set aside is set forth in our financial policies, correct? The ADA compliance earmark, I just want to make sure I understand the structure of the bullet point here, because I think Commissioner Mapp's threshold questions it's just how it's phrased, but I just want to make sure I'm following this. So the ADA compliance liability is actually not an acceptable expenditure for capital set aside as written in the policy, or it's not clearly articulated as a appropriate use of capital set aside?
No, I think that, and I had a back and forth with Lindley, but I think that particular bullet point is, I think the one that caught the, there are two reasons we're waiving capital set aside in the ordinance. One is those numbers don't quite add up to 50% they don't quite add up to the required amount per the policy. Two is that the Columbia River levy portion is not a city owned asset. And so for that reason, it doesn't really meet the, definition of capital set aside as it is put forth in policy.
You probably lost me somewhere along because the levy wasn't even on my radar screen. So I just want to make, so if I could isolate the question just to make sure I'm following the first part of it. So a sidewalk, city asset, building curb cuts, that's an appropriate use of the capital set aside?
Yes, that is.
Okay, because I thought in the intro that we were hearing something different, so how does the levy come into this?
So, if you see, we just pulled the slide back up. So the policy dictates that 50% of the essentially available ending fund balance after adjustments is supposed to be put into capital set aside.
Okay.
Normally, we go through a process where we solicit requests from bureaus to essentially spend that capital set aside money. This year, instead of doing that process, we said, you know, we know we've got liabilities we need to pay for. Let's not even go through that process.
Okay.
And we put them down on the slide. And the issue is, after going back and forth with the attorney's office, as I said, once we ended up balancing, we didn't quite hit the 50%. So you'd have to waive just because it says 50%. And then B, the flood safety benefit support line, that third one, does not meet the technical definition for capital set aside in the policy, because it wouldn't be a city owned asset.
Okay, I think I follow that. And I mean, Commissioner Mouse, I mean, I'm looking at this as sort of two levels. One, you know, our ability to invest in infrastructure and appropriately reserve for necessary investments to address our deficits that are generations in the building, you know, that is a broader
deeper discussion that figuring out how we can set the next council up for success there on how to appropriately save for necessary infrastructure, whether it's lawsuit driven or just, right, you know, amortization, depreciation of assets, right? I mean, it's all cities struggle with this, all governments struggle with this. We have not done any better, it seems, than any other city or locality on that. And that's predates all of us. I mean, I just, in my short time on council, you know, even the way we talk about the capital set aside, we waive it all the time. And it's just, so it sort of begs the question, like, why even pretend that this is guiding our budgeting? You know, that's, it's I will say the way they've done it here in some ways elevates the importance of ADA compliance.
Thank you.
I mean, it's because the fact that we're, you know, proactively allocating towards those liabilities ahead of request from bureaus to utilize capital set aside, you're actually, I mean, your overall process, but the liability to the front of the line, if I'm understanding correctly, relatively speaking, now we're coming, but, you know, with this amendment proposing adjusting some of that, but they're actually trying to save for the liability in the overall approach to the budget relatively early. Or am I missing something?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true to some extent. I think I will say the language of the capital set aside policy actually calls out transportation as one of the uses. And then I looked back at prior capital set aside processes, mm-hmm, and there were three main things we fund: ADA compliance in parks, mm-hmm, ADA compliance in PBOT, and Kirby. And those were the big requests. So I said, you know, we know we have this. We also know we have this flood safety benefit fee, which again doesn't fit. So the driver behind this was, you know, what are things that we know are A, you know, within the realm of capital set aside mostly, mm-hmm, and B, are known liabilities that we have to pay for, frankly, next year in our budget. And these were the ones that we selected.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm not sure it changes the general thrust. Like, we're going to have to pay for these things. We're not spending money on the curb cuts. And in some ways you put a chunk of money at the front of the line in terms of what's within the set aside, and the proposed amendment adjusts a percentage of that. But I don't think anyone's losing sight of our obligations under the ADA lawsuit here, now or in the future. That's just my takeaway. It doesn't take away from the broader conversation on how we save for infrastructure, because we have not solved that. And I'm not sure how to yet, but.
Commissioner Mapps.
Commissioner Gonzalez, I appreciate your engagement here. I'll be transparent. I'm not sure if I'm following entirely the argument that you're making here. I guess as a guy who's been in the transportation space, one of my obligations, and it's frankly an unfunded mandate, is to build 10,000 curb cuts. There's never enough dollars for this. This is something we need to do out of human decency. And because we have lost a lawsuit here, it's very easy at moments like this to go in and grab dollars that we've set aside for that purpose. Frankly, some version of this move that we see today has happened, I think, every year I've been on this council. And as we all consider how to cast our votes on this particular amendment, I hope we all take a moment to think about the comments that we delivered earlier today for the White Cane Day proclamation and what we're actually doing here.
Well, and just to build up, so this is a question back to staff, are we in compliance with the ADA lawsuit as far as we know? I mean, are we cutting curb cut, or is that something I need to take offline with the city attorney? I mean, I'm just trying to, are we building curb cuts at the pace contemplated in the settlement?
Short answer is no.
Okay.
We're behind, but we have 12 years, I believe, to actually accomplish what was laid out in the settlement agreement. We have built a large number, and to make this even more complicated.
Yeah, this is turning out to be more complicated.
They are not all built by PBOT. When the Bureau of Environmental Services replaces a pipe in a road, they often have to build curb cuts because PBOT requires it. When a developer does development on a lot and there's a corner, they have to build an ADA curb cut. So we're getting there. But I would say, and I don't know, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I would say, given the schedule of the settlement and the amount of curb cuts we have built, we are probably behind.
Yeah, and I would just add, having been in a meeting not too long ago with PBOT and City Attorney, my understanding is we are actively in compliance. There's a question about the long term, that, and as you said, City Administrator Jordan, it's a little more complicated than just X number each year. There's some accommodation for ups and downs and variability. But there is a longer term discussion that needs to be had about both funding ability and operational ability to sort of complete the work, even if the funding is available, to maintain compliance in future years. And I don't know if the city attorney has any other input to disabuse me of what I just said, but that's my understanding.
It is my also understanding that we got Will Terry from PBOT, who's an expert in this space. Would it make sense to invite Will to... weigh in on this conversation?
Commissioner, you can invite anybody you'd like.
I will. You out there?
Well, he's pulling this up because you actually opened a whole other can of worms that I guess I didn't fully grasp, that private developers are also providing some of the curb cuts. Do we have any idea what percentage of those curb cuts come from private developers versus, you know, us?
A lot fewer lately.
Yeah. I mean, that's, it opens up a whole can of worms. We're not developing. We're not creating enough.
The obligation, Commissioner, is on the city to do it. How it gets done, whether it's through an obligation by a private developer or it's us rebuilding them because of the settlement, the number's still the same. Our obligation is still the same, and it's still the city's obligation.
So. No, I just, when we look at how we get behind, if there's not development in the city by private enterprise, we're not. It's a headwind in meeting our requirements that I'm not sure I fully understood until you just mentioned it.
Okay.
So I'm told Will is unmuted, and I see Shannon has her hand up too. I don't know who's working as the traffic cop here. Will, are you there?
I am, Commissioner.
Okay. Can you shed some light on the conversation? I don't know how much you've been tracking the conversation we're having this morning. It's basically about the capital set aside for ADA compliance and liability issues. That's both a parks thing and a PBOT thing. We understand that you spend a fair bit of time with the PBOT side of things. Can you tell us, probably the question on the table right now is, are we in compliance? Are we building enough curb cuts to comply with the lawsuit that we lost?
Yes, that is correct. We are in compliance. As the DCA mentioned, Jonas Beery, there is an ongoing question about our capacity to continue to meet our requirements, our 1,500 ramps a year requirement for the duration, another 6 years of the settlement period.
Thank you very much. Will, is there anything else? I don't know if you've been following this conversation since the beginning. Anything else that this council should know about this particular amendment? Basically, the concept on the table is to pull $500,000 roughly out of our set aside for building curb cuts for people in wheelchairs and blind people and whatnot. And we'll divert that to hire more staff for city council offices. Can you give us a sense of the trade-offs involved for at least PBOT and folks in wheelchairs?
I think you've actually done an admirable job of pulling out the nature of the trade-offs that are being asked, right? And that, I think this is the correct forum for you all to decide which is more important. I really, I would stress that this is a tremendous unfunded liability. I mean, simple math suggests that 1,500 ramps per year at a current cost of about $26,000 per ramp is $39 million a year. And this is, PBOT is hurting, and it's very difficult for us to also absorb that kind of, you know, unfunded liability. It's a tough decision.
Thank you, Will. I appreciate your perspective. Mr. Mayor, I don't think I have anything.
All right, very good. And it looks like Will already spoke. Commissioner Ryan.
Yeah, I appreciate that this amendment is allowing us to have a conversation we probably wouldn't have had if this amendment wasn't on the table. There's really two conversations here. There's a conversation about the fact that we underspent money. We heard from a lot of constituents, especially the transition team commission, that we really underspent providing constituent services support to the new council. And so we're trying to pass that on. And then the second conversation, which you're taking leadership on, Commissioner Mapps, and it's an important one, is a long-term plan for ADA compliance. My question to people at the table would be, anything we're doing with this amendment, is it going to impact the number of everything that Commissioner Mapps has said next year? The productivity of that work? When it seems like this is a long-term decision the next council has to address in terms of that work?
But not to put everybody on the spot at once, I'll just say $473,000 represents less than 20 ramps out of 18,000. And it's a long-term obligation.
Yeah, and this is a 1% cut in something that's a long-term.
You all get to make the judgment about whether that's worth it or not.
Okay, I still do think it's two conversations, that's all. And that's what happened in this conversation, is just we split hairs. And the good news is we're having it.
Yeah.
If I wouldn't have brought this amendment up, we would have just all went aye. Yeah.
So I probably will have some questions on this later, but frankly, I'd rather get to public testimony first, unless anybody has objections. Do we have public testimony on the budget? All right. So folks who are interested in public testimony, you have 3 minutes each. Name for the record. If you're new to council, you're going to hear and see one yellow light with 30 seconds to go. When the light turns red, that is when you should stop your testimony. And if you're joining us virtually, we won't hear anything you say after the light turns red. So try and keep it within that 3 minutes, please.
Thank you, Mayor. First up, we have Terry Harris.
Welcome, Terry. Thank you for being here.
Great. Thank you. First, a quick disclaimer. I am a member of GTAC. This is our co-chair who's going to testify as well.
Before we start the timer, could you just tell us your names for the record, please?
That's okay. Terry Harris.
Thank you.
And I'm Bill Hemsey.
Thank you both. Thanks, gentlemen.
Okay. So as a disclaimer, I'm a member of GTAC, which, you know, has been a pretty outspoken on the issue of council staffing, has issued several recommendations that are relevant to your discussion today. However, and due to the short notice that we've had on this item and the amendment, testimony today is just in my personal capacity. It's not been reviewed by GTAC, nor is my appearance here endorsed by the committee. Nevertheless, what I intend to say today is informed by my participation in GTAC, and it's substantively consistent with our recommendations. And it's great that the council is going to get some additional money for desperately needed staffing under this amendment. Okay. From GTAC's research and review of 20 comparable cities, it's clear that currently budgeted levels for the new council are going to be inadequate for individual counselors, inadequate for shared research policy committee and operations staff, inadequate for the responsibilities of the presiding officer. The Charter Commission made a very conscious decision to make the new city council the very center of the new government. And though the commission failed somewhat to understand the fiscal significance of that decision, it's up to us to fund it appropriately. That said, I need to also say that it runs somewhat counter to a consultant's report on the budget that the city, that GTAC has also supported. That was mentioned earlier, the Jessica Kennard's report. And the report would suggest that, one, budgeting on the fly in a budget monitoring process ought to be avoided for these reasons that you've just discussed. The budget office shouldn't be in the position to come up with these trade-offs. That's your decision. And taking money from already massively underfunded capital liabilities to award an interim solution for a massively underfunded ongoing expense doesn't solve any problems. I guess if the decision is truly between 20 curb ramps and a council that functions, I'm going to go with the council that functions. And I think But we all know that's not the true decision here. It's not a split between the two. It's a multidimensional strategic priority setting across the entire city that you're doing. And it's a burden that we're unnecessarily putting it on the budget process itself. So my personal bottom line is I support the amendment, primarily in the hopes that additional staffing will be of some assistance to the new council for sorting this out in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Mapps, did you have a comment right now? Or?
Is your...
Commissioner Mapps, yeah. I'm Bill Kinsey.
Yeah.
I'm also on the list of people.
Why don't we hear from Bill and then
we'll... Yeah. That sounds right.
Well,
first.
Well, thank you, Mayor.
You got it.
Yes. I'm joining Terrace because I'm also a member of the Government Transition Advisory Committee and currently serve as a co-chair. And I wanted to observe that our recommendations that we recently distributed include, you know, a recommendation for increased funding for the new city council. And I wanted to make that observation. So thank you.
Thank you, Bill. And thank you both for your service. Yeah. We appreciate it. We know you didn't get paid very well. And we know the hours were really long. So thank you.
And our appreciation is mutual to all of you.
Thank you. Commissioner Mapps.
Sure. Gentlemen, I appreciate you being here today. And in many ways, I think you've been put in an unfair position. I think there is a, in fact, I know there's a consensus in this room that we all think that the next city council should have adequate staff to do the work that they do. But the proposal on the table today is to pull dollars that have been earmarked to help people in wheelchairs, to help people with, who are visually impaired. Today, we literally in the morning session declared today or sometime in the near future to be White Cane Safety Day. And the proposal on the table is to take $500,000 of those dollars and to spend it on one-time expenses in the new council offices. For me, that's just a hard, or it's not even a hard choice. I'm just always going to lean into the ADA public-facing side. And it doesn't negate the sort of core values that you bring to this, but and that I think we all bring to this. But I remain unconvinced that the right way to fund future councils is on the backs of people in wheelchairs.
Yeah, my only comment on that would be, and I didn't hear this in the presentation earlier, yeah, but you have the budget process from, you know, last spring and summer.
Yeah.
And I do not know what the budget allocation in that big budget goes towards curb ramps. Yeah. What you're seeing today, I guess, is the money that sort of got left over from last year that it's like bonus money to spend additionally on curb ramps. I mean, that's my understanding of it as a kindergartner.
Let's stay tuned and watch this space. I'll tell you, the necessity for curb ramps, and our needs to comply with, this federal settlement. And frankly, the chronic, and profoundly dysfunctional, underfunding of our public infrastructure, especially our transportation infrastructure, ain't going to go away before the end of the year. It's going to require every Portlander to lean into this conversation very thoughtfully. And I appreciate your thoughtful engagement here today. You're one of the reasons why the city works. Thank you.
Commissioner Mapps, may I make
of course.
This will be a personal.
Yeah.
It's not official. But just hearing, if my personal view would be, if there's been a settlement of a lawsuit, you do have an obligation. If transfer of the money meant that you were not going to be able to satisfy that obligation, I would advise fund that obligation. But I'm not hearing that this transfer is going to prevent that. I'm hearing that we're, you know, on schedule or on progress, and it's a set aside to try to figure out, you know, how to fund it over the multiple years. I'm also thinking having adequate funding for staffing or for the new city council helps to enable an effective city council that can address the longer term obligations or you know, the ways of funding ADA and other obligations. But that's my personal thinking from what I'm hearing in the discussion today.
And I appreciate that. And everyone who knows me knows I'm a policy guy, and I got brilliant people working on my staff who make visionary ideas a reality. And I'm also an infrastructure guy, so we build stuff in the real world. Helps people get to where they want to go, how they want to get there. I think both are very important. But I also hope will tell you, since up until very recently getting these curbs built, was one of my primary responsibilities. This is not a given, folks. This is why we got sued. This is why we lost. The only reason we are going to stay in compliance is if we have someone either in these chairs or those chairs trying to hold this county or this body accountable for fulfilling our basic legal obligations. And in the tents, for example, we see that we don't fulfill that all the time. All right. Thank you so much. I do appreciate your time and your wisdom.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you. Mayor, we have one more testifier.
That's it?
Yes.
Right. All right.
Juliet Hyams online.
Welcome, Juliet.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Good afternoon. My name is Juliet Hyams, and I live at 2324 Northwest Marshall Street. And I'm sorry I can't join you in person today, but my colleagues from the GTAC just did an admirable job of discussing Commissioner Ryan's motion. I'm joining them in supporting his motion. And although I haven't had time to study the details, I just got a pretty good idea of them. And I support the spirit of the motion. And in a similar to the points that my colleagues just made, and I will note that I'm testifying today on my own behalf, not as a member of the GTAC. However, as Terry pointed out, we're very familiar with this issue from serving on the committee, and we have repeatedly expressed concern about the minimal counselor staffing for next year. I have also heard the same concerns during my community outreach about the transition. This is a difficult decision. We both have to complete the curb ramps, but also support the charter and in a manner that will make it a success. And we're already committed to that as well. So I think that Commissioner Ryan's motion offers a way to make life easier for our next council, enhance service to their constituents, and support the success of our new charter. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Juliet. We appreciate your being here virtually as well. Thank you.
That completes testimony.
All right, very good. So we have now completed public testimony. Yes, Jonas.
Just related to the amendment, Mayor, I just wanted to make a couple of clarifications so folks understand. One is just I've heard staffing come up a couple times, and that's certainly a possible use. I just want to be clear, the amendment does not specifically identify staffing as the appropriated intent. That's a decision that's made in the OEO, but just want to be clear that it's not called out specifically for staffing. This is a one-time resource, and so it wouldn't be without having some other packages associated with it, wouldn't be typically used for a staffing short-term through the remainder of the fiscal year. There would need to be some accommodation and thought about the ongoing funding. And so that's a conversation that will occur at that future moment. But I just want to be clear about that because staffing has certainly come up a couple times.
I'm glad that you brought that up because this is something I have been wondering about and we've had some conversation about. What can you give me some examples what it could be used for? Could I use it to go visit our sister cities
it could be used for staffing. Be clear about that. I just want to be transparent that that's not specifically called out in the language of the amendment, and that would be the a decision that would be correct.
This is gap funding for next year for the council and for the mayor's office. They get to make decisions, Commissioner, next year on how they would like to use this. Sure. What we're hearing from everyone is that we need more support for constituent services, which might identify where some of these ramps go.
Well, absolutely. Who does decide? This is a thing which I'm not quite clear on. Who will decide, should this amendment pass, how these dollars will get spent?
So, I mean, I think we have a choice about how to budget them. I mean, I think they would just get budgeted generally in the council office bucket for the, there's a new bucket for the new council that will take their seats on January 1st. I think they can sort of direct it within their budget for how they want to spend it. I mean, I think if they wanted to create new positions, they would certainly have to come back to do that.
So
they wouldn't be able to just turn around and use this money to hire new staff.
So are you going to divide the dollars amongst each council office? Does council come together and take a vote and decide this is how we're going to do it? Does the city administrator decide how we kind of disperse these dollars?
So, I mean, if they want to come back and allocate the funding to use it specifically for staff, for example, they'd have to probably bring another supplemental budget ordinance forward to do that, either in the OEO or a separate ordinance. But likely, I think they'd have to move some money around. I mean, there's some ability just administratively to move money without coming back to council. It just depends on what exactly they want to do with it.
So
we would probably just budget it right now in one bucket, and then it would be allocated out internally from there. But in order to hire staff, they'd probably have to come back to do that. It depends on what they're trying to do with the money.
So who is the they who gets to this? Who decides? Is it all of council? Yeah, so at some point, council
office and the mayor. It's in the amendment.
That says where it's going to be spent, but.
That's who has the authority.
That is consistent with your understanding, Director. Okay, great. Thank you.
And then, Mayor and Council, just a second, just maybe a point of minor clarification. I believe the language of the amendment inadvertently says December 21st, and that should be December 31st. So I just wanted to clarify that for the record.
Okay, well, I wonder assume that's why that was there.
Yeah, correct.
I thought maybe script. Legal told us to do that. Yes.
So
I have a couple of thoughts on this. First of all, I want to acknowledge I'm hearing outstanding arguments on both sides. That sounds like a cop-out, but I'll get to an actual position in a moment. Commissioner Ryan is correct. The new council offices are likely understaffed. And I've been very transparent about that. Dan and I have had the conversation, and I've had it with many people who are running for the city council. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, I think it's incumbent upon the new city council, once they have decided how they want to govern themselves and what committee structure they would like to enact for their own governance, and once they decide how they would like the constituent services model to work in the community, whether they need bricks and mortar officers or whether they will be doing something different in terms of going around the community and meeting people in different locations, that's really the will of the next council to determine. Once they make that determination, they have every right as a sitting city council to bring forward an alternative package to fund the council offices however they want. But the guidance I provided for this bump, for this spring bump, fall bump, was fairly clear. And I also noted the fact that this is one-time only funding. And if there's one area that we collectively, myself included, trip up our budgets, it's we use one-time only funding to fund ongoing positions, because then it locks us in to a fiscal problem, which is no fun to resolve. Number two, just doing basic math, if this were to be staffing, and I'm hearing it's not, which is probably good, because it's only $28,000 per office. It's not enough to hire anybody for any purpose. And so that doesn't make sense. So necessarily, it's going to have to be some collective decision about a few positions, if it's positional, and the council's going to have to decide who and where and how do those positions get created, and who do they serve? Who do they report to? What function do they serve? I don't think that's a decision this council should make personally. That's just me. But I will, of course, go with the will of my colleagues. There are ways that these funds could help the next council as we have allocated them in this bump. The first is, we know we have a fiscal cliff next year, and that is before we have completed our labor agreements which are still outstanding, will eventually be closed and will then also have to be worked into the next fiscal year budget as an additional delta between the resources coming in and the cost of operations, which we currently experience. There are things that we could fund, like police overtime or the Portland Street Response. To me, those are higher priorities right now in the heat of crisis than making a decision that the next council could actually make for themselves anytime they want. And so frankly, I just feel like leaving that to them for this purpose. Commissioner Mapps, I also agree with you on this settlement. And I want to be clear, it's not just that we reluctantly lost. Yeah. We settled, which means we agreed to it. It wasn't forced upon us. We as a council said, this is what we are committing to. And I agree with Commissioner Ryan that $400,000, it's de minimis, to be perfectly honest. But the more we put it off, the more future councils are going to have to deal with it as you get closer to the end of the 12-year time frame. So there's that as well. But I think Commissioner Ryan brought this forth in good faith. I think his reasoning that the next council should be well-funded, and our friends on GTAC who agree with Commissioner Ryan have good logic on their side. But I don't think this particular package solves any of those problems. And so I will be voting no. But I would encourage Commissioner Ryan and GTAC, and I'm assuming Commissioner Ryan will be here in full force, and GTAC will put together a reasonable package that actually adequately funds the new city council offices based on how they want to govern themselves. So that's just where I'm coming from. That's my headspace.
Mayor, can I ask a follow-up question?
Of course, Commissioner.
So in this bump, we're allocating a couple hundred from the mayor's office to, I think, Lansu, the Chinese Garden. Do you anticipate that's one-time spend or ongoing?
I'll have to defer to Ruth. I think that's one-time, isn't it?
I don't mean from a technical perspective. Mm-hmm. I mean from the type of investments that we're making. What that's paying for, is the need going to go beyond this year?
I'll give you my supposition. Absolutely. Lansu Chinese Garden is one of our major tourist attractions. It's in the heart of our city. It's an incredibly important cultural icon for the community, and it's in a tough location with a lot of issues. So we've had Portland Solutions, the problem solvers. We've been working with the business community on lighting, on incentives with the police bureau, on the mobile precinct unit, the local office, bike and walking patrols. That we are making substantial investments as a council in the recovery of the Lansu Garden.
And then, so this,
and the emergency there is that the number of people coming through is down by about a third over the last couple of years. And so that's alarming to me. And I am pleased that this council has continued to make that a priority.
And so then it leads to the technical question, is the Lansu dollars allocated? That's one-time money?
Yeah, just one-time money.
And so I guess I'm just calling out, I completely follow your general point that we are often solving incrementally ongoing obligations with one-time money. I mean, it's a bad habit and we do it all the time. I'm just admitting your office is doing that exactly in this bump with what you've done with Lansu. So I'm just seeing incongruity in your position.
I'll tell you where I've been consistent, Commissioner Gonzalez. A very similar amendment to this one came forward to the city council during the regular budget process. I voted it down for the same reasons. And that's why we'll vote this one down.
Yeah, it's just you weren't consistent in how you funded what you're clearly saying is going to be an ongoing obligation the next government's going to inherit.
Well, there's a difference. So let's be clear. You're a better attorney than I am, and I concede it. I've always enjoyed it. I actually hope that Lansu dollars are not ongoing. I hope that problem goes away. I just personally don't think it will. Whereas if you you're right. I think we're on the same page there. Whereas if you hire somebody for a staffing position, that is presumed to be ongoing indefinitely.
Yeah. And I mean, we can go back over the history of, charter reform implementation, all of the places we added cost. And at this point, you know, we didn't have to do the capital spend, the cost of new council offices the way we did it. We chose to go with an expensive path at the recommendation of staff. We've added an incredible amount of overhead at the recommendation of staff. Those were not required by charter reform. And we're getting to the end of this process, to the end of 24, and we've understaffed the new electeds. I'd argue on both
the legislative. But again, they have the ability, if they so choose, when they come in, they can look at the entire $8 billion city budget and say, we want to deprioritize something else and add several hundred thousand dollars to us as the electeds for our staffing support. They have that ability to do so, just as we do.
I
say, why get ahead of them? Let them decide the results.
I just find the argument somewhat insincere. You made a number of choices for the next council.
I'm very sincere. I'm just giving you my honest opinion based on the facts.
And we also heard that we're waiting for the spring bump. We're not doing the spring bump anymore.
I didn't mean the spring bump. Let me finish.
We heard best practices to not have spring bump any longer. So for 6 months, the city council, new city council.
No, they can bring a supplemental budget anytime they want. They can bring it on their first meeting if they wish.
Okay.
You know that.
Actually, I haven't experienced a lot of that we try to insert something before a bump or the particular budget process. When did we first have this conversation? It was over a month ago, right? That we brought this to your attention, that we had this desire.
Yeah, Commissioner, probably three to 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, we asked for the carryover number and the bump in early September, and then you executed this. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this conversation, right? Okay, so we did make the request. It didn't make it, so then we had to pull it out of something.
Yeah. Okay, correct.
I'm just saying that this hasn't been sneaky. We've been talking to you about this for a few weeks. All right.
I didn't get it as an exception request through the regular process, I think, but yeah,
we brought it up, then at follow-up meetings, we asked about it again, and then we had to take this action to follow through. And it's from just listening to community and GTEC. So here we are. I just, again, think it's a very thoughtful gesture. It gives a little bit of flexibility and an on-ramp to build in some constituent services of some sort. We all are talking a lot about collaboration. Each district can have an allocation and figure it out. I agree with Commissioner Gonzalez that we really did focus a lot on construction. I was on the record then saying I think our offices are currently the ones we have are fine, and we could save money by focusing more on staffing. So, this journey's been rough. And I do think we all know at the end of it, we really shortchanged what the community wanted, which was more access to their electeds and more responsiveness from their electeds. And so when people reflect on that, they said, well, how are we implementing that when we only have one staff member per elected? That's all. So we thought we'd give them a little bit of a grace and an on-ramp on day one.
Well, that was cheerful. Anything else? Call the roll on the amendment.
Maps.
Well, I appreciate this dialogue. I think we talked about a lot of important things and a couple of things I'm confident of, I think. I'm certainly a majority of folks on this council recognize that future staff or future councils will likely increase the size of their staffs, and that is their prerogative. I will also tell you, if Ryan's amendment passes, the headline in the newspapers tonight and tomorrow will be something like, city council pulls more than $400,000 out of funds earmarked to help blind people and people in wheelchairs safely cross the streets in order to hire more staff or buy more stuff for your city hall offices. I think given the choice between direct service and frankly growing our administrative expenses are pretty straightforward on this one. And I am also struck at this moment and a little bit agitated by the fact that literally this morning, this council came together for White Cane Safety Day. And in my comments, I tried to remind folks that this is not just a, that disability issues are very much literally a civil rights issue. Indeed, that's what the ADA is all about. And just hours after proclaiming October 15th to be White Cane Safety Day here in Portland, I certainly do not see myself pulling $437,000 out of the funds that we have set aside to build curb cuts, which is why I vote no.
Rubio.
So I'm really torn here because I'm weighing the significance of the charter change and making sure that our new structure can get its legs in its first year. I really believe in that. I absolutely believe that we need more staff for council. And I really applaud Commissioner Ryan for taking leadership to put the conversation on the table and being responsive. And GTAC is correct about the underfunding. And I really came into this completely expecting to go a different way. I think what's striking me are the numbers that I'm hearing about what our settlement requirements are and that we're behind. So I'm actively torn. I more have an issue with where we're pulling it from. And that's my one hesitation here, because I do believe we need more staff for council offices. I think because we're pulling it from this fund, I think I will vote to keep it where it is, and would really support the council doing what it needs to do when it's elected in January. So I vote no.
Ryan.
Yeah. Well, thank everyone for taking the time to dig into this with me. I'm glad I brought this amendment and created this opportunity for dialogue. I haven't heard much from you since I've been on council about this issue before. So thank you, Commissioner Mapps, for finding your voice today. I find this false narrative to be a bit disingenuous today, but we do obviously need to have more discussion about the city's long-term compliance with ADA settlement. I appreciate everyone who participated in the White Cane Safety Day at Council. I know curb cuts and the wide range of street treatments necessary to ensure full access for Americans with disabilities are vital for Portland. I'll be an advocate for that always. However, I want to be clear with Portlanders, with my colleagues, my amendment does not impact ADA compliance with the construction of new infrastructure in the first 6 months of next year. The city has 9 years to comply with ADA settlement. As interim manager Jordan said, 437,000 represents 20 ramps out of 18,000 ramps Portland needs to build in the next 10 years. The 437,000 I want to move into 2025 is what our elected offices, fellow commissioners, and the mayor underspent last fiscal year. That's all. That's what it is. And we have the privilege of this underspending of our budgets, and I want to pay that privilege forward to the 2025 City Council. I believe that 437,000 will be better spent in the short term to engage constituents during the government transition and to help the new City Council navigate their first ever budget in a completely unprecedented political landscape. I vote aye.
Gonzalez.
I appreciate the discussion. I think at times, however, there's been some double standards applied in how we approach ongoing versus one time. I hear a lot of preaching and a lot of not walking the walk on that subject, including in the preparation of this year's budget. But I vote aye.
Wheeler.
A lot of things I could say, but I'm not going to. Instead, I'm going to point out the hard work that our budget team put into this. I want to thank you all once again for your tremendous effort. I'll have more to say when we get to the final vote. But I also hope the new council is watching this, because I want you to understand that what you're walking into is a never-ending series of hard choices. And as I have thought about prioritizing this budget, I don't think I've been disingenuous at all. I think I've been crystal clear for years about what my priorities are: public safety, homelessness, livability, and economic success and recovery for our city. And that is where I have prioritized my funds. I remember it was either my first or my second year as county chair. The economy was in a tailspin and we were laying people off left and right. And I took a massive pay cut because I wanted to make sure we could continue to support our frontline services. I felt that the elected offices should come somewhere near the end of our priorities when it came to what we were doing. Folks, as you come into this office, the first thing you're going to notice isn't that you're understaffed. What you're going to notice is that you have a shortage of police support in our community. You're going to notice that you have massive overtime because we have staffing issues in our fire bureau. You're going to notice strong public pressure to fund Portland Street Response fully and full time. You're going to have to address livability issues. And we all hear multiple times each and every day, including today, about the homeless crisis on our street and how it is being exacerbated by substance use disorder and lack of support for people with pervasive mental health issues. Those will become your priorities. As I've been very honest in saying, yes, I think you will be understaffed. But I will also tell you, I think this council is understaffed. I think our bureaus are understaffed. We talk about 911 callers being in short supply. We talk about cops being in short supply. We talk about people even in our infrastructure bureaus being in short supply. We talk about the people who manage emergencies in this community being in short supply. We're all understaffed. We all have too much to do because we're a city that is experiencing an unprecedented number of simultaneous worst case scenario crises. And so we all have to step up. But again, on the gentler side, when you become a city commissioner and you have voted for a council president and you have decided which committees you want to create and you've had a chance to evaluate what the staffing requirements are, and I hope GTAC will continue to work with the new commissioners to help create that structure, you will have every ability whenever you want to bring forth the budget that supports the vision you have for the governance structure. What we've created is a placeholder for you. You have to finish the job. That is on you. And you will be able to bring a supplemental budget forward. But I want to warn you, in order to do it, you're going to have to figure out what doesn't get funded. And because we're a public body, you're going to have that discussion like we did today in public about what you are not prioritizing if you are prioritizing expanding your own staff. I vote no. The amendment fails. Can I get a motion to adopt the fall supplemental budget?
So moved.
Commissioner Gonzalez moves. Can I get a second?
Second.
Commissioner Mapp, second. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Mapps.
I want to thank the mayor, my colleagues, and budget staff for all the work that went into all the work and all the conversation that went into this year's bump. It is a tight budget cycle, that's for sure. I also want to specifically acknowledge and recognize Commissioner Ryan for his creative attempts to find resources for pressing public needs. We very much disagree on that particular proposal, but I appreciated our discussion, and it kind of highlights the trade-offs that policymakers have to make in tough times. I believe this bump will leave our next council in a strong position to weather some turbulent times, which is why I vote aye.
Rubio.
Thank you to the entire budget team for all of your hard work and your presentation on this bump. Also to Anthony and Haley and putting this together as we're rapidly approaching our transition in the midst of this tough economic picture for our city. It's really complex work and we're really lucky to have such a dedicated team. So I vote aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Gonzalez.
Notwithstanding the conversation that we just had on staffing at the elected level and to a certain extent at the administrative level, I do want to call out that we continue to have structural deficits in public safety, in particular in Portland Police and Portland Fire. We do not have straight line staffing sufficient to properly manage either of those bureaus yet. And it's going to take a number of years to build that up. I look forward to a time where we don't have to address overtime as much as we do and bump processes, but it's not going to be overnight there. And I think I'm going to leave it at that. I vote aye.
Miller.
This is my 24th and final budget that I will vote on. And I can't honestly tell anybody here I'm sorry about that. I have benefited from outstanding budget teams over the entirety of my mayoral term. And I think we have the most solid budget team here in front of us today. And I really appreciate the great work you and your team members who are not here today, that you do each day, each and every day. I also want to appreciate my colleagues. Yes, we have tough conversations on this dais. And we dare to disagree. It's not one of those things where we all get in the same room and we all say the same things and we agree on everything all the time. If you hear your elected officials stand in front of you and agree on everything all the time, you have a serious problem with your democracy. And I like the fact that we bring up tough issues. We have direct conversations. We highlight differences of opinion and we cast our votes and we go on to the next day as we will today. So I want to thank my colleagues and their staffs for their hard work on this fall supplemental budget. I vote aye, and the budget is adopted. The emergency ordinance passes. Thank you. We're adjourned.